Hello and welcome everybody on another episode of this podcast. Today we are excited to have Aaron Thompson on the podcast, Head of Growth and Business Development at Sturdy AI. Aaron is a seasoned leader with over 20 years of experience in software and customer success. He's dedicated to helping companies grow by focusing on what really matters, customer success and experience. He is known for blending a team-oriented people-first approach with data-driven strategy, a philosophy he has carried for his days as a college football player to building and thriving customer success organization. Aaron has led growth initiatives at Sturdy AI since January, and in 2017, he founded Red Slacks, a customer success education, public speaking, and an advising company. He's passionate about technology, especially AI, as you're going to see today, automations. He loves transforming customer success from reactive support to proactive and building a revenue-driven growth. In today's discussion on future of customer success, Aaron will share his insights on how AI and automation are reshaping customer experience. The growing convergence of customer success and customer experience and what leaders need to do to prepare their teams for the next 5 years of change. Please join me in welcoming Aaron Thompson. Aaron.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. Always get excited when I have a day where I get to be on a podcast or a webinar or anything and talking about customer success and experience. And then my newest love of AI, of course, as well. So thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And Aaron, we are fortunate to have you today. And I'm going to start with a very critical question that I think everybody is thinking about today, and that is, how has customer success evolved over the past decade, and what are some major shifts that you predict in next 5 years?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. The last decade, customer success itself is only a couple of decades old. Originally it was devised in about 2005 at Salesforce by a guy named David Dempsey, who was in charge of renewals. And from there grew what we know of today as customer success management. A proactive strategic way to work with your clients, really predicated on the recurring revenue model, where we get a little bit of money over time instead of a whole bunch of money up front. That's what really created the need for this thing that's called customer success management. Before that, it was just customer support. When I sold on-premise software, you owned it, perpetual license, maybe a little bit of upgrade fees or something over the years, but basically I got my lifetime value from you at that point of sale. When we moved into the SaaS world, Salesforce being the first uber successful company in the business model, all of a sudden we get a little bit of money over time instead of that whole bunch of money up front. And that all happened about in 2005. And so the industry itself is about 20 years old. And so if anybody says I've been doing customer success for 25 years, they don't know the actual origin story of the industry. That being said, account management applies. My whole career was customer support before I found customer success about 10 years ago. And so it's a really poignant question for me. Like, how has it changed since I found it? And I found it like a lot of people. I actually, with a vast technical support background, was able to obtain a job called the head of customer success. And I was tasked with fixing the churn problem. They gave me 12 months to take a 40% churn rate down to anything under 10%. And if I did, I'd get a nice bonus. And if I didn't, I'd get let go. And I got that, I took that job and thought, okay, I can do this. I came in on my first day as the head of customer success. I pulled out my laptop. I went to Google and I typed in, what is customer success? Now that I am the head of this thing, I should figure this out. I thought I knew what it was, right? But I didn't. And from that point on, I have just dedicated my entire career to it. Things that I've seen in that experience. Back then, it was a very high touch, very white glove way to manage your relationships, really designed for the most strategic, highest tier segment of your business, or really just at that B2B enterprise level. A lot of conversations were around happiness, satisfaction. And what we've learned over time is happiness doesn't drive renewal. And that's typically the role of a customer success leader or team, the motion in the business. The first thing is to secure the renewal, create the environment where the renewal in this repeatable revenue model is predictable and repeatable. And that's the role of a CSM or a CS organization, is to create that environment. They can't do that themselves. There's a lot of factors that go into whether a customer will renew or not, but their job is to create the environment where they might or where they would. And so that was what we were looking at. It was like renewals, high touch, white glove, like very expensive, frankly, very not scalable, frankly, and very squishy. It was sentiment, it was happiness. What we learned was that doesn't secure the renewal. I might love you, but if you're not solving my problem, and I'm not achieving my business goal or objective, whatever the thing is that you fix for me, those are outcomes versus experience. If I'm not getting my outcome, I'm not gonna renew just because I love you. And converse, the other way, it actually applies the opposite. I might hate you, but if you're the only way for me to achieve the outcome, I will continue to renew. And so what we learned over time was we need to focus on outcomes, not the happiness and emotional side of it. That's important, but first and foremost, did they achieve their outcome? And this is either gonna be return on investment or some kind of make me bigger, faster, stronger, right? It's like a pain or a gain is how I refer to them. I've got some pain that I have to have something for to alleviate, or I want to get bigger, faster, stronger, more efficient, whatever, that would be a gain. But whatever it is, every product delivers an outcome or else it wouldn't exist. Are they achieving it, number one? And then number two, do they know it? Have they realized it? Have we made it so stupidly obvious to them that now we've created the environment for a predictable, repeatable renewal? That's what we learned was, that's what we need to focus on. That's what we need to drive to. So then the question is, how do you ensure that? And that's where the motion of success planning started. That started to become much more prevalent about 5 years ago, where we realized, wait, we can actually define what success is through your desired outcome plus your desired experience. So give me what I want, solve my problem, and do it how I want at whatever level of engagement and friction and, you know, whatever, right? The delivery model. Those two together make my definition of success. And as long as I've defined that, delivered that, and then demonstrated to you that you've achieved it, and you have realized, you confirm, yes, you saved me X amount of capital this quarter. Check, that's an outcome. And you did it how I want. You didn't force me into QBRs every 3 months. There wasn't friction when I had any support issues. I knew who to call when. My customer experience was frictionless and smooth, and I achieved my outcome. Yes, check. Okay, now we can move on. And then at the end of the year, it was just a matter of looking back and saying, look what we've accomplished together. And so that was about 5 years ago where we got into success planning and the three Ds, as I call it. If anybody's curious to learn more about that, redslacks.com. There's nothing for sale on that site. It's just simply where I put my thoughts and stuff like that. There's an article called The Three Ds that goes through that in more detail. But define what success is, deliver it, and then demonstrate that I've done so. That's really the core of what customer success management's all about. And about 5 years ago was where digital started to crop up. And for the last 5 years, it's been a matter of, okay, now we know like what drives the renewals, outcomes, and we know what determines the winners and losers, customer experience, right? If there's two ways for me to achieve my outcome, what will determine the winner and loser will be who has the better experience. Yes. But if there's, right, if there's no competition on the outcome, I don't have to worry about experience. But once there's even one competitor, think of taxi cabs and Uber. Taxi cabs ran the world in terms of getting a ride from point A to point B. They never had to worry about the experience side. And then Uber showed up, and now all of a sudden the experience is better. Same exact outcome, but I can order it on the phone. I can contact the driver. It's a personal vehicle, not industrial. doesn't have a piece of plastic between me and the driver. Like, I plug my phone in, they offer me water and mints. Like, I can pick the music. Oh, unbelievable. Same exact outcome. Nothing changed there. Just a better experience. And it just starts decimating the whole industry because they didn't even think about innovating on that front until Uber shows up. That's what determined the winners and the losers, was the experience side. So if there's even one competitor, customer experience, which in most industries there is, customer experience is what determines the winners and the losers. And so we start moving into the digital motion of delivering outcomes, doing it through frictionless experiences, and being able to do it at scale. So it's no longer this white glove, high touch motion. We still have that. People buy from people at the end of the day, especially B2B enterprise deals. Like, you're not going onto a, you know, Salesforce and swiping a credit card for a six-figure deal, right? You're going to have an account exec and you're going to go through the typical sales motions. That being said, there is a lot of the mundane tasks that we can now automate. And that's where AI comes in. That's where chatbots originated from. Like, what are the easy things, the self-service kinds of things that we can enable through technology so that the people can still be doing that more strategic motion of the customer success industry. So that's kind of what I've seen in my 10 years in the industry. It was originally really kind of soft skills, like squishy feelings and very high touch. And now it is much more outcome delivery, business goals and objectives focused, enabled by technology while still allowing or enabling the CSMs to now operate in a more strategic level. Again, all focused on outcomes and experience, success planning, etc. But if we can, again, automate some of those mundane tasks, I can spend more time doing value realization with my executive stakeholder, for example. So that's what I've seen in the last 10 years. And it's exciting to see where it's going to continue to go. A lot of organizations, originally we had like high touch, low touch, tech touch. Those were kind of our three segments. And all of the digital stuff was reserved for tech touch. And then we realized, wait, we could move what we're doing here up into the low touch, and that'll free up some time. And now what enterprises are doing is moving it actually into the high touch segment. So that even the most strategic customers have some digital motion that they, most of them like, frankly. Like, I would rather be able to, if it's a how-to, not a break fix thing, not like support stuff, but customer service stuff, like how to do stuff, not something's broken. I would rather go to a website and just ask a bot, how do I do this? Boom, right? And that's where chat, you know, generative AI is helping so much. Obviously, the agentic AI is a big component with that as well right now, because people like that. It's less friction. It gets me to my answer, which in that moment is the outcome that I want. Get me my answer as quickly as possible and give it to me the way that I want. Typically, no longer is it calling and waiting on hold for a customer service representative. It's interacting with some kind of technology, even AI-enabled voice. It, you know, even if you're gonna call in, why not have an agent be answering those more simple questions? And a lot of organizations are moving that tech motion up into even the highest tier of their segmentation.
That was so amazing, Aaron. I actually took some notes, by the way, just to ensure that I remember that. But yeah, you are absolutely right. So people mistake customer success with customer experience only a lot of times. And they think, yeah, as long as things are very rosy, everybody's very happy, you know. But as you said, exactly right. Sometimes people forget that even your customers, the POC that you have, are answerable to an outcome based on the amount of money they are spending with you. So outcome takes the first place. Outcome is what you need. And then, of course, you need to ensure that, you know, customer experience is there as well once there are multiple competitors, which, of course, are there for everything. That makes perfect sense. And yes, you talked about AI, and I kind of wanted to dig deeper into that. What do you think, what is a key role that AI and automation is playing right now in the future of customer success? I mean, we hear AI everywhere. You said agentic AI is there. We are getting, you know, cognitive AI is making a big wave right now, being able to search knowledge bases across your company and so on, right? Plus the generative AI LLMs that we do every day. So AI is so ingrained suddenly within the last 3 years into our lives, of course, it must be impacting customer success as well. What do you see?
Yeah, it's a good question. And certainly it's in that digital motion, right? It's just, you know, machines doing stuff that humans would have done. One of the first jobs I ever had, speaking of like e-tech and, you know, your customers and your business, call center. I took call center phone calls at an insurance company here in Portland, Oregon, where I live. And I spent 8 hours a day talking on the phone. A lot of those questions could have been answered by an AI agent today, or they could be answered either online or even through the voice. So those are the types of things that would have allowed me to do something else with that time than be on the phone, right? And that's where we're seeing AI kind of start to play out. But what amazes me today, it reminds me, AI today reminds me of the cloud in like 2002, when it was a new idea. Software as a service was a new idea.
Yes.
And, you know, people just talked about the cloud. It's in the cloud. Like, they didn't know what it meant. They didn't know, like, is there multiple clouds or is there just one cloud? Like, what is the cloud? What does that actually mean? How do you do software as a service? Like, why does one of the biggest rising software companies, Salesforce, have a no smoking sign with the word software on it? You know, a guy in a suit jumping around, like, they're saying no software, but they are software. Like, I just don't get it. That's where AI is today. Or blockchain about, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Like, people didn't really understand it, how it really worked. Distributed databases. Like, I don't get it, right? So I think that's where we're at today. So when people hear AI, normally, naturally, understandably, they revert to what they know, which for most of us is generative ChatGPT or something like it, right?
Exactly.
And
yes.
We learned, you know, the first time I went to it and we used it like Google, like, what's the blah, 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 and it would answer, right? And then I'm like, wait, that's not very cool. I can just use Google. And then it's like, wait, make me a bulleted list of this. Boom. Oh my God. So that's what generative means. It can generate things. This is a whole new way. I can write articles. I can do content. I can make images. I can create stuff. Generative. Okay. So, but that's what we always think when you hear AI, that's kind of where everybody's mind goes. Then we move into, so that's generative. Then we've got agentic, which is the co-pilots of the world. You got your Microsoft co-pilot and all the different, you know, do things for me is what the agentic is really all about versus the generatives, like, make things for me. And then you've got this area of AI called applied AI that most people don't even know exists. And it's the ability, and what applied AI is it just does the same thing over and over and over and over, and it gets better and better and better at that one specific thing. That's where my company Sturdy AI lives. We are in the applied AI space. And so I'm in sales. My sales calls oftentimes start with me explaining to people, we are not going to generate images and stuff for you. We are not a agent to interact with to go book flights for you or hotels or whatever. We are going to run in the background. You don't even log into Sturdy. You don't even see Sturdy. It's a middle layer between your tech stack. We integrate into it, scanning all of the communications with your clients, and then we automate back out to your tech stack what we found in terms of signals, actionable insights for churn prevention, account growth, product insights, even coaching opportunities for your team. We can automate back into it. So the user never even goes into it. We just dump what we learned into a Slack channel or in your CRM or email you or whatever you want. We automate back into it and you never even log into Sturdy. That's AI without having to learn anything. I did a post on LinkedIn last week called AI with no UI. Like the best UI is no UI, right? I don't have to learn anything.
Exactly.
There's no training. There's no digital transformation. There's no change management. I don't have to get people to use it. It's just running in the background. That's our version of applied AI at Sturdy AI. And I think the first thing we collectively in customer success and experience need to do is start to understand the differences, because they've all got very different applications and use cases. Like, if you try to use us as generative, it just ain't gonna work. That's not what it's designed for, and vice versa. But they all have very important areas. Like generative's great. That can help me build business review decks more quickly. That can help me prepare for renewals more quickly. The mundane stuff that would have taken me a long time, I can use something like ChatGPT to do that. And then you've got the agentic that can offload support tickets and overhead for your customer service team. If there's an agent that the customer can use on your website that gets them to their answer, their desired outcome, in a quicker, more easy avenue, desired experience, you've now delivered customer success within your support ticket, for example, ticket deflection, all of that stuff. And then you've got all this applied AI and how to, you know, the different, there's a bunch of different ways to use that. But I think that's the first step for CS leaders, is to really start to understand the differences and start to think through how can they apply those to offset the mundane that for the humans, right? I heard a great quote a couple years ago. AI is not going to replace CSMs, customer success managers. AI is going to replace CSMs who don't have AI. And I thought, that's a pretty good way to look at it. Like, everybody's job is going to change. And that's kind of the most profound thing about where we are today, is with these different types of AI, it's not just another tool to use or another way to save stuff. So like, think like the cloud, right? We were really using the same tools. We were just saving it into the cloud instead of onto our machines. Like, that's really the difference. But on our daily work behavior and how we think, didn't really have to change. That's very different than what we're going through now with especially generative AI, understanding how to really use that as an effective tool. Like, the fact that anyone would write an email from scratch nowadays is just like, why? Why would you do that? There's so many ways to save time using these tools, and it really requires us to think differently. What does work mean? Means something different moving forward than it ever has. Well, probably ever has since the personal computer started being used in business, right? Once computers got into the workforce, we had to start adopting and get out of paper. When I was taking those phone calls 100 years ago, we had books of benefits that we would thumb through on the phone to answer benefit questions, because we didn't have it electronic yet. And that was that. I mean, I'm not that old. I mean, I'm pretty old, but I'm not that old. That wasn't that long ago. And that's where we were. And then, of course, obviously that all gets digitalized, and, you know, that's and now you wouldn't even call for it. You would just like ask the bot or ask the website, you know, ask the agent. Like, you wouldn't need, like, it's all changed. And I think that's kind of like where we're at today. The changes that AI is going to create is going to be like when we went from typewriters and paper to computers. Now we had to learn how to do a bunch of stuff differently. And the people who learned it quickly were in an advantage. And the people who were laggards probably struggled for a while until they were forced to adopt, you know, electronic paper, emails or whatever, right? And now here we are moving into this new world, and it's the same kind of thing. Like, it's not just something else to use. It's a whole nother way to work. And that's really, really important. I've got a buddy, Jake Dunlap. He owns a sales consulting company called Scale. And Jake was in front of a few hundred sales leaders and account execs, individual contributors, leaders. And he says, all right, put your hand up if you've used AI. And everybody's hand is up. He's like, okay, perfect. Keep your hand up if your organization has ever sent you to AI training. And everybody's hand went down. No leadership is enabling people to use these new tools in the most effective ways. We're just saying, go figure it out. You know, we'll buy you the paid version of chat or whatever, right? But there aren't guidelines, there aren't best practices. They're like, we're just getting there. And I think that's the first step. Leadership in customer success, customer experience, sales, marketing, product even, needs to start enabling the individual contributors to be able to leverage these tools, much like there were innovators in 19 whatever having people move off of typewriters and onto computers. We need to have innovators having people move off of using technology how we have today into how we're going to use it tomorrow. It's a definitively different world that we're moving into. This isn't just some flash in the pan. This is, life's going to change. Work's going to change. It's already starting, and it's not going to go back. It's only going to get more prevalent in business every day.
No, absolutely, Aaron, you said it right. I think Andrew Nick said that AI is the electricity of this century. When you just think about it, And you were so right. So my mentor, Jim Ayub, he says this for years now that, see, AI is not going to replace you. Be sure about it. AI is not replacing jobs. But if you don't learn AI, you will be replaced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be something that's required.
Yes.
For most jobs, you know? Go ahead, Mark.
No, I was just saying, and companies, and as you said, the companies are not really putting enough effort to empower you to learn AI. It is expected out of you, but not taught to you.
Yeah.
And that's where you get into this struggle of using AI because you have to, but you don't understand how meaningful it is. In fact, not just that, companies do it. There are companies who are just going to buy AI because on that shelf of tech stack, they need something. But there are no use cases. And that's why when you said initially, it was very interesting, Aaron, that you have to begin with what success looks like. You have to understand what my use cases are. What problems am I going to solve before I decide what am I going to buy? And that's absolutely perfect. In fact, when you think about it this way, and when you think of customer experience managers or customer success managers, right? One of the biggest challenges they are facing in this vertical right now is loyalty and retention. Companies are valued based on retention. You and I both know literally retention is one of the key markers of valuation currently. What is your ARR like? What is your drop rate? Acquisition cost comes much later. People are happy with it now, right? You can pay more money as long as the customer stays. So what are some key learnings that you will provide to these CXMs or, you know, customer experience manager listening to this podcast right now on how to do better when it comes to loyalty and retention specifically?
Yeah, you know, there's no like magic bullet for that. You know, if I had a single answer to that question, I'd be a billionaire. Just sell that to every company. But you know, that's exactly it. Customer lifetime value has got to be 3 to 1 in terms of a ratio compared to CAC, customer acquisition cost. Typically, you got to get 3 times what it costs you to get the customer in order to break even on that customer. And that's because of the overhead of delivery, onboarding, support, everything that it takes to just keep a customer. And that usually is about 1.5 to 2 renewals, depending on the average deal size. And so, you know, you've got to, this is really what created that. Again, going back to that story of Salesforce and customer success, you've got to keep customers long enough to overcome that acquisition cost. And if you do it right, you could keep them forever and they'll keep paying money forever. That's the upside. That's why we're moving to this subscription economy, why industry after industry is moving to the as a service model, is because it provides a recurring revenue stream in perpetuity, as opposed to the product era, on-premise software. You bought it, you sold it. I got a lot of money when you bought it, a lot more than I get when you start in the SaaS world, but I don't have that repeatable recurring revenue. I've got to go find another one and another one and continuing to fill the top of the funnel, where now we can focus on the bottom of the funnel. Customer success, customer experience are really a business growth strategy that says we're going to grow our business from the bottom of the funnel back up by way of advocates, expansion, referrals, et cetera, as opposed to just filling the funnel with MQLs and SQLs. Those are super expensive ways to acquire net new customers. It's where you got to begin. But once you have customers, if you're creating advocates out of them, for example, you can use that advocate to create what's called a customer success qualified lead, or CSQL. This started to become prevalent about 5 years ago as well, where we were realizing, wait, this lead came from a reference of a current customer saying that you should go check out Sturdy AI. It's great. That lead we didn't have to market to. Our acquisition cost was 1/13 on average the price of the original customer with the MQLs and the SQLs, because there's no outbound, there's no inbound, there's no pay-per-click, there's no SEO, there's no blog post. They found out from a friend, and conversion rates are higher, deal times are faster, everybody wins. Sales' job's easier, marketing didn't even really have to do anything, and then the delivery is easier because everything's aligned because it came through that. It's kind of like a side door in your funnel, if you will. That's what it's all about at the end of the day. Keeping customers, number one, because if I don't stay, I can't advocate for you. And then growing them through two types. You've got cross-sell and upsell, and tracking those separately is important. Most organizations lump those into net revenue retention or NRR, but it's actually important to track them separately because they have different acquisition costs. An upsell is very inexpensive. You're just paying more for the same thing. I don't have to teach you anything. It's all good. Just more money. Cross-sell, I have to teach you something new. You bought something new. There's going to be onboarding and training and implementation and all of that. And so there's different overhead for our business. Those dollars have different profitability lines. I've got another article on Red Slacks called Drop CAC Measure Rack. And it's drop customer acquisition cost and measure what I call revenue acquisition cost. Because there's five revenue streams. You got your net new, you got your renewal, you got your cross sell, you got your upsell, and then you've got that advocate CSQL that I was talking about. Each of those has a different overhead to your business, and each should be tracked separately in your books so that you can see the profitability of each of the different revenue streams in your business. That's an important metric that most people don't track. I did for 7 years when I was a CRO. We're using that concept at Sturdy because we want to know how inexpensive it was to acquire a customer. It all goes into that acquisition cost. But it's really within a given customer, you have different revenue streams. My first dollar was expensive as hell. My renewal dollar is very inexpensive. My upsell dollar, very inexpensive. Cross-sell, a little bit more expensive. And then that CSQL, well, that's the cheapest way we're ever going to acquire a net new customer. And being able to track all of that, because it points right back to the day-to-day operations of the customer success and customer experience organizations. These two departments are always fighting for a table at the revenue, or fighting for a chair at the revenue table, saying that we don't get the respect that we deserve. The company just keeps focusing on sales and marketing. They don't help us, they don't enable us. We don't have a budget to do any tooling or anything. Well, how much are you affecting revenue? Well, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Like, how can you make a revenue argument if you can't track your effect on revenue? And when leaders start to be able to draw the clear line between what they do as an organization and not just GRR, you know, retention revenue, but NRR, including expansion and cross-sell and upsell, but the almighty CSQL. How many net new leads did your team generate because they made the customer successful? That is not tracked effectively. It's not even mentioned. Yet there is correlation there. And there are some dollars that are in your pipeline that are a direct result of what the customer success and experience teams have done. They just haven't found a way to track it back to it. And that's the missing link for us to get that seat at the revenue table. We want to get the same respect as sales and marketing. The reason they get so much respect is because they can track return on ad spend. They know their ROAS, right? If you're a marketer, they can track their deal times and their revenue brought in, you know, on the sales team. They've got very clear leaderboards. We don't in the post-sale world, but we need to if we want to be at that same table as them.
Agreed. And when you think about it, Aaron, so not only you get your CXQL, you are able to track it, then you also know that, okay, these are the customers have bought in because I did amazingly well. But also ensuring, as you were saying, you're able to track every renewal and being able to add that as a KPI of something that we have added as a CX team or, you know, CSM team, because renewals, they are like a blessing to any company, right? You have zero CAC, almost zero CAC, and then you are getting, you know, all of the customer is still there. And usually, I don't know, I am not sure if there is a study on it, but this is something that I've seen a lot of times. If the customer renews for the second time, you will see that they're going to stick with you for a very long time going forward. So you're absolutely right. And when you think about it this way, what are some key metrics? I understand that, you know, CXQL is one of the most important metric that you should look at and start tracking that. Because in fact, Aaron, I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah.
Honestly. So yeah, it's an amazing suggestion and makes perfect sense. So CXQL is an amazing metric to track. Second, I would say, would be something around renewal. What are some other key metrics that I should track as a CSM or a CXM?
Yeah, it's really going to depend on the direction of the company, right? I mean, right now, net new customer acquisition is so difficult because of the global economic headwinds that almost every business is facing, that we're getting a big spotlight put on us in the post-sale world. And it's all about revenue retention, gross revenue, you know, renewal number one, right? Don't lose the customers. And I had a post Tuesday, was that yesterday? No, 2 days ago on LinkedIn where I said, churn is not customer success's problem. It is not a customer success problem. It's everybody's problem. And this post went crazy. In the last 2 days, I think it's flirting with 75,000 impressions by this point. It's almost got 1,000 likes in 2 days. It's one of the biggest posts I've ever had on LinkedIn, and it struck a nerve. And the reason it struck a nerve is because when customers renew, it's a team effort. Everybody did great. But when customers churn, it's the customer success team's fault. It's not a team effort all of a sudden. And that catch 22 is where a lot of leaders, they fail. They're set up to fail because they don't have the insights into what actually caused churn. And churn, there's a great quote in CS, the seeds of churn are planted early. In fact, 90% of the customers who leave at their first available opportunity. So if I signed a 1 year contract, if I churn after year one, 9 times out of 10, I wanted to leave within the first 30 days. I just was stuck into a contract. That's how important onboarding is, implementation. The beginning of the relationship is absolutely critical, but that's not even where the relationship really begins. Where the relationship really begins is in the demand generation and awareness stages of the life cycle. When the BDR called me and I answered the phone, what they say better be true and easy to achieve. And the, you know, whatever they use to hook me better be realistic. When the marketing team has a campaign, they better be aligned with what the product can really deliver. And then you've got the sales team overpromising, misaligning expectations. And then you've got onboarding and there's friction in there. And it's a goat rodeo. It's like herding cats. I'm confused. I'm frustrated. I bought this new thing and all of a sudden I'm regretting it. And then you get customer experience and customer success folks, account managers, support. If that struggles, that could be a huge issue in my CX part of my formula. Friction in the support process, all of it, the product itself, if it's buggy, like every single department has their hand in churn and renewal. When customers renew, it's not just because of customer success. It's because of all the other things before it also. But when they don't renew, it's because of all the other things before it also. And so I ended the post with customer success is a team sport. And that's how we need to start looking at it. Churn and renewal is a team effort. We're going to win together or we're going to lose together. We're either going to keep this customer forever or they're going to be out. One way or another, it's affecting the whole business, not just customer success. That's what I would argue customer success managers, customer success leaders, we can't fix what we can't control. And so we need to be crystal clear with the leadership on what we can actually affect based on our autonomy, our job, our role, whatever that is. And that's where I see the future going for customer success. Selfishly, Sturdy AI helps shine a light on all of those other areas so that the leader can show, here's actually what led to churn. Because about 70% of the time, when a customer leaves, it's not because of the CSM or the CXM. They might love them. They didn't get their outcome, or it was too expensive, or there was too much friction. Support was too long. The product, you know, my insights are not being added to the product roadmap. I don't feel like I am a partner with you at all, right? I'm just a number. You call me 90 days before renewal as though we had spoken all year, but I hadn't heard from you in 120 days. Like, there's a million different things that go into it. And about 30% of the time, it is something that happened in CS and CX. 70% of the time, it is not. And yet we're the ones who are supposed to be the heroes. We're handed a flaming bag of churn and told to make it, you know, turn this into roses. It's just unrealistic. And that's why that post this week struck such a nerve with the industry, was because someone finally, I had so many people reach out to me and say, thank you. Someone's finally saying this. Like, it is a team sport. We can't be held solely responsible for it. So from like a KPI and metric perspective, not a whole lot's going to change. You got GRR, NRR, you got your CSQL rates, right? You got support tickets deflected maybe if support rolls up under you. It's all about the trajectory of the company. Are we trying to grow right now, or are we just trying to hang on? Because if we're trying to grow, then maybe I'm going to focus more on the CSQLs and generating advocates and try to get net new leads. Or if we're, you know, if net new customers are so difficult to acquire, we're just trying to keep our customers, then I'm going to focus on the success planning and making our current customers successful, maybe a little growth, but it's really all about the GRR at that point. So that's what I mean. Like, it's about the direction of the company and what they strategically are looking to do in the next few years. So I can't really answer that, you know, just with a direct question, but universally, organizations need to get real. Churn isn't just CS and CX. Neither is renewal. And so they should not be the only ones held accountable, and they should not be the only ones compensated according to churn and renewal. I've got another article actually on Red Slacks around that as well from a few years ago. I don't think we have time to get into that one, but that's what I recommend CSMs and CS leaders start to help the organization realize. We can't affect what we can't control. When I took that head of customer success job the very first time to fix the churn problem, I took the job under one circumstance. I told the CEO who wanted to hire me in, I'm interested, I'm willing to take this on. However, I have to have access to our marketing team, our sales team, and our product roadmap, because I will not be able to fix your churn problem at the bottom of the funnel. If marketing is mispromising, if sales is overpromising and pushing customers through too quick, and if the product doesn't do what we say it's gonna do, and it's not in line with what the customers want it to do next week, next month, next year, I don't have a chance to save to affect that churn rate just at the bottom. And he said, sure. And so I was in the executive, you know, the ELT meetings, I was in the product roadmap meetings, and I was able to affect change. And 12 months later, 40% was down to 8%. On a year-over-year churn rate. And it was because it wasn't just me, it was a cross-departmental effort. So if companies want to actually affect churn, this has to start at the ELT level, cross-departmental. And there are tools like Sturdy AI that can help kind of shed the light on what's really causing churn, because it's not just what happened after they signed the contract, I can guarantee you.
No, absolutely. And when you think about it, 32% decrease in churn, Aaron, that itself deserves an article or a book, and I would love to read one from you. That's amazing insight. And Aaron, I want to thank you so much, Aaron, for this specifically. There was so much information here, nuggets of wisdom that we can take back. I would encourage every CSM, every customer experience manager to actually listen to this podcast. And as we wrap up, what is one last thing that you would like to tell leaders of CXM CSMs? One last thing that they to do to develop their people?
To develop their people, provide them, if you don't have budget for training them on these new technologies, provide them time to go learn it. You know, there's a lot of ways to learn stuff for free, but people don't learn it because they don't have time. And so free up some bandwidth for the team, find a way to sneak in an hour a week. It doesn't have to be a whole big thing. 1 hour out of their, they're probably working more than 40 hours a week anyway. Free up an hour, a dedicated hour for them to go learn stuff. Do it collectively. Learn about generative, learn about agentic, learn about applied. Start to strategize about how you're gonna use it, how they think they can use it to make their lives better, to free up so they can do more of those human things and less of the mundane. That's gonna make them more efficient over time, but it all starts with education. Like they've got to, the leaders have to educate themselves and the ICs have to have the ability to be educated. And so that's what I would recommend is, you know, don't just get AI to check the box to say we did it so that the board gets off our back. Figure out what you really want it to do for you, what it can do for you based on your customers and your product and value proposition, your business model, and then lean into opening up the team, you know, enable the team, empower the team so that they can be successful with these new tools. Don't be a leader who is holding onto the typewriter when the personal computer was rolling out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes so much sense, Aaron, when you think about it. We have to invest in education. Either you do by money, get them the courses, or you do by giving them the time. But you have to invest, and you have to ensure you invest in yourself as well. Because unless you understand AI, it's not really gonna make much change, right? Even if your entire team does. Thank you. That's very insightful. I really appreciate the conversation today, Aaron, and I'm quite sure all of our listeners do as well. And with that team, today we had Aaron who provided us more information and told us exactly how you can impact change as a CXM or as customer experience manager. Thank you, Aaron, again. To everybody who's listening, thank you so much, guys. We'll be back with the next episode soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Monica.